Our study tonight is out of the prophecy of Zephaniah, chapter 1, verses 4 through 13, the targets of God's judgment in Judah. Unlike the other Old Testament prophets, Zephaniah had a genealogy of four generations, so he was a man of prominence and even of royalty. He offered the prophetic view of the upper class. However, upper and lower class prophets both wrote of judgment and blessing for God's people in the day of the Lord, a phrase Zephaniah used more often than any other prophet. Zephaniah 1, 4 to 13, predicts God's targets of judgment in Judah, what we view for our insight and our application. I want to read the passage and then we'll look at it. Zephaniah 1, 4 through 13. God is speaking and he says, I will also stretch out mine hand upon Judah and upon all the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and I will cut off the remnant of Baal from this place, in the name of the Chemarim with the priests, and them that worship the host of heaven upon the housetops, and them that worship and that swear by the Lord, and that swear by Malcolm, actually, that's a Moloch, and them that are turned back from the Lord, and those that have not sought the Lord, nor inquired for him. Hold thy peace at the presence of the Lord God, for the day of the Lord is at hand. For the Lord has prepared a sacrifice. He has bid his guests. And it shall come to pass in the day of the Lord's sacrifice that I will punish the princes and the king's children, and all such as are clothed with foreign apparel. In the same day I also will punish all those who leap on the threshold or over the threshold, which fill their master's houses with violence and deceit. And it shall come to pass in that day, saith the Lord, that there shall be in the noise of a cry from the fish gate, and a howling from the second, and a great crashing from the hills. Howl, ye inhabitants of Maktesh, for all the merchant people are cut down, all they that bear silver are cut off. And it shall come to pass at that time that I will search Jerusalem with candles, and punish the men that are settled on their lees, that say in their heart, the Lord will not do good, neither will he do evil. Therefore their goods shall become booty, their houses a desolation. They will also build houses, but not inhabit them, and they shall plant vineyards, but not drink the wine thereof. Okay, having predicted the eventual worldwide judgment in Zephaniah chapter 1, verses 1 to 3, the Lord announced that he would punish the southern kingdom of Judah for her sins, in verse 4a. The targets of that judgment are named and explained in Zephaniah 1, 4b to 13, with a lesson for us today. First, God would punish all of Judah's idolaters. And that's in verses 4b to 6. God would remove every element of the worship of the Canaanite fertility god of Baal. That was a religion with terrible sexual acts that had afflicted the nation since the time of the period of the judges. So this had been a form of idolatry that had gone on for generation after generation after generation. God would then cut off the Chemarim. Chemarim are the pagan priests that had been appointed by Judah's kings, along with the Levitical priests who had defected from the worship of God in order to worship Baal. So you got two different kinds of priests. You have priests who are pagan priests, native Canaanites who are brought in. You also have God's priests that compromised, and they started worshiping Baal and started practicing along with these Chemarim. God would also punish those involved in three other forms of idolatrous worship. First, God would punish the overtly pagan worship of the stars, where people bowed down on flat housetops to the hosts of heaven to try to harness the powers of nature. Incidentally, every now and then I hear about Christians who pay attention to the zodiac and the horoscopes, and that's just based on the stars, and that's following the guidance of stars. That's actually what they would do with these stars. They would worship the stars in order to harness the powers that they thought of the stellar universe for activity here on Earth. So the connection between what's going on in the stars and what's happening on the Earth, horoscopes are very, very close to that, and the zodiacs and people getting into that. So that's nothing we should fool with. God would punish the syncretistic. Syncretistic means union or mixing. A worship that mixed the worship of God with Moloch, And Molech was the chief god of the Ammonites. And this was a worship that involved abominable child sacrifice. Can you imagine worshiping the Lord with child sacrifice? Mixing it together. But that's what these people were doing. And then God would punish others who were religiously indifferent and unconcerned about worshiping the true God, though they may not have been worshiping other gods. Now, that's very interesting. You've got these vile forms of worship, Baal worship. You've got the worship of the god Molech with abominable child sacrifice. But then you have God punishing people who are indifferent to the evil that's around them. That's all they are, just indifferent. And God views that as wickedness as well. It's very interesting. The Lord then called on people to be silent before him due to his coming judgment. God had prepared Judah to be the sacrifice and invited the Babylonians as his guests to the sacrifice. Second, God would punish the political leaders who evidenced their disobedience to him by wearing the latest fashions from Nineveh and Babylon. That would be foreign clothes. Adopting foreign dress outwardly most likely implied that they also had absorbed foreign values and foreign practices. This was a classic form of worldliness. We call it worldliness today, dressing, you know, like people of the world that are around us rather than dressing like Christians. Third, God would punish all oppressors who plundered the vulnerable for material gain. Their avoiding stepping on the threshold of the door likely alluded to their leaping into homes to pillage and steal, for the idea of avoiding the threshold is parallel to the words violence and deceit. So apparently this was, you know, there were some people that they didn't want to touch the threshold, otherwise they would anger the god within the house. But I don't think that was the issue here at all. I think they were in a hurry to get into the house, so they fled right over the threshold. And we know that because leaping over the threshold and the violence that is mentioned in the verse, their violence and deceit, they're actually in parallel with one another. So you look at them as complementary ideas together. Fourth, God would punish wickedness in every part of society in Jerusalem. It names the various areas of the city of Jerusalem there. Fifth, God would punish the wicked merchants who grew wealthy by abusive financial practices. Some of these practices involved usury, where they would charge high interests to people, loaning people out, and they probably used dishonest weights. You would have one set of weights for something if you bought it, and then if you turned around and sold it, you would have a different set of weights. One would be higher and the other would be lower. That way you could cheat people without them knowing it. And, of course, this is an abomination. God called that stealing, which it really is. Cheating in business is a form of stealing. Sixth, and this is interesting, God would make a diligent, comprehensive search throughout Jerusalem so that no one would go unpunished. In particular, he would punish the men who were like wine that had been left on its dregs. I know in the King James it says lees. In the old days, they would have wine and the sediment would settle at the bottom. And if the wine hadn't been shaken up and moved around, it would settle and just thick there. And then it would turn, the whole wine would turn syrupy and get crusty on the top. And it'd get to the point where it'd be bitter and you wouldn't be able to drink it because it had just sat around and hadn't been used. So instead of removing the dregs of daily pollution, Judah had become hardened and indifferent to God, to where the people did not even believe that God did as much as their self-made images. So consequently, they had ceased to believe his promises, claiming he'll do nothing, neither good or bad. Their own spiritual complacency led them to think the Lord was complacent. So in judgment, their goods would be looted, their houses destroyed, and they would plant vineyards but not drink the wine. It's interesting, both here in verse 13 and then back in verse 6, you have this emphasis on complacency. Complacency or indifference. And that's something that really irritates the Lord. I mean, there's open wickedness, open vileness. Yes, that's wickedness. But there's this more subtle form of wickedness, and that's where he is just ho-hum. There's sort of a boredom with God, or sort of a boredom with the Lord. God doesn't like that at all. So the lesson is God would punish not only the obviously wicked like idolaters, the worldly political leaders, the oppressors, and greedy merchants who abused people financially. He would also punish those who might not have been idolatrous, but who were uncaring about its existence in Jerusalem, as well as the complacent who ceased to trust in the Lord. So indifference, complacency, wow. So in application number one, may we avoid not only obvious evil practices like idolatry, worldliness, oppressiveness, and abusive greed. We might never commit those sins, but notice. But also the less obvious sins of indifference to big evils in society and a complacent lack of faith in the Lord. Since God is thus not only concerned about flagrant, obvious, abusive evil around us, but about our reactions to it, may we abound in holiness. That is, separation from sin in thought and in deed. I'm reminded of the Apostle Peter's command in 1 Peter 1. I want to turn to that just to get it here. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 13 through 16. Notice what the Apostle Peter wrote here. Wherefore, gird up the loins of your mind, be sober, and hope to the end of the grace that is to be brought unto you at the revelation of Jesus Christ. As obedient children, not fashioning yourselves according to the former lusts and your ignorance, but as he which has called you is holy, that's separate from sin, so be ye holy, be separate in all manner of life, because it is written, be ye holy, for I am holy. Be separate from sin, as I the Lord am separate from sin. We have a lady in our church who has a son who's in a university, Liberty University down in Virginia. And she has access by way of her phone. She can pick up the broadcasts of the chapel periods there. And she was listening to one of the chapel periods. Her son was listening to the chapel period. There was a lady there who was speaking. She had been someone who had been very deeply involved in the pro-abortion movement. And then she came to the light and came out of it. This lady was a believer before she went into the pro-abortion movement, and she's still a believer. And she gave her testimony. She had come from a church. It was a Baptist church. But the people in the church had decided just to ignore the world because of all its wickedness out there, not even address it, and just kind of create a fortress mentality. So she grew up not knowing what was going on in the world. She went to the university, and she got hit with this pro-abortion stuff, and before she knew it, she was involved in it. And after a while, she found out how wicked it was, and so she broke away from it. But her point in the chapel period was make sure that if you come from a church where they haven't taught you about what's going on in the world and shown you the answers to it, try and encourage your pastor to get into it, because she said, I wasn't warned. I didn't know. And no one warned me about it. The church was kind of complacent of what was going on in the world around them. They just wanted to admit, I mean, they were involved in that wickedness in the world, but the kids grew up not knowing anything about it. And so this lady whose son was there, she said, I'm thankful we're doing that in EPOG. And I said, well, that's one reason we're doing it, because there is a world out there, and God does want us to react to the sin. We shouldn't be ignorant of what's going on, but there are biblical answers to it. But it's really important. God doesn't want us to be complacent. He doesn't want us to stick our head in the sand. We need to know what's going on out there. But we need to know the biblical solutions to it. But he doesn't want us to be complacent. He doesn't want us to be indifferent. He wants us to be very involved and very keen in regards to knowing what is right and wrong and being educated in regards to it. So God help us not to fall for... You know, it's one of those easy sins that can creep up on you, the indifference and complacency. We would never probably get involved in idolatry or witchcraft, those types of things. But complacency, that's another thing. That's something that's very easy.